from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A new report reveals that 42,000 acres of wetlands in the Bay Area must be restored over the next 15 years to mitigate the effects of climate change. Rising sea levels, swelling tides, and strong storms threaten billions of dollars worth of businesses, homes, and infrastructure. And the report from 100-plus Bay Area scientists and 17 government agencies warns that wetlands either need to be repaired or buffered with seawalls and levees, lest rising tides, instead of lifting all boats, threaten highways, airports, utility services, and much more of this region's infrastructure. And with us to talk about the report and to talk about what needs to be done, Sam Shookit, here in studio, executive officer of the California State Coastal Conservancy, and they're an independent state agency that works through non-regulatory means to protect, restore, and enhance coastal resources, including wetlands, and the agency helped coordinate the wetlands report. Welcome, Sam Shookit.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And let me also say good morning to Letitia Grenier, who's here with us in studio as well, co-director and senior scientist of the Resilient Landscapes Program, San Francisco Estuary Institute. She was the lead scientist on the wetlands report, and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let's just talk about this report first with you, Letitia. I mean, a lot of people involved, covering a lot of bases, and the report is pretty intensive and certainly covers a lot of ground. I want to get to the heart of it, though, if I can. It's pretty much telling us we're at a crisis stage here. There's a lot at stake.
That's exactly right. I think it's hard to get scientists to say this is the crisis, but that's what we're saying in our scientific way. This is the moment if we're going to do something about restoring and retaining these wetlands to provide less expensive protection for our shoreline and also to retain this nature of our Bay Area that we appreciate so much.
And the assumption here that everything is at risk, I mean, in terms of highways, airports, like I say, infrastructure.
That's absolutely true. We have lots of land that's at or almost below sea level now, and we know that the sea levels are going to rise.
And are we talking about, I just want to clarify, 42,000 acres or 54,000 acres? Newspapers reported 54,000. I said 42.
Yeah, that's right. I'll explain the difference between those two. So in 2009 was the last time we actually mapped how much of these tidal marshes we had. But since then, there's been 12,000 acres that have been restored. Some of those are not yet tidal marsh, but in the natural course of things, those mudflats, as they are now, will accrete sediment or silt and become tidal marsh in the future.
We're, Sam Shookit, talking about thousands of acres already in the process of being restored, yeah?
Sure. We've restored about 12,000 acres since the 1999 goals report. So we're more than halfway to our 100,000-acre goal. Another 1,000 acres will come online this Sunday at Sears Point in Sonoma County. The Breach to the Bay is a public event. Anybody who wants to can go attend that.
Well, also, this is, at this point, something that has a high price tag on it. I mean, the job that needs to be done that we're talking about here, over $1 billion, right?
Well, Letitia and I were talking about that in the green room. Actually, it's not that much money compared to, for instance, the New Bay Bridge or the state annual budget. I mean, it's about what the cost overrun was on the bridge. And the alternative to not doing it is going to be considerably more expensive.
You're trying to bring a lot of diverse interests together here, though, are you not? I mean, that's why you had so many scientists in this report in the first place, I assume.
That's right. Well, we wanted a scientifically definitive and defensible statement. And we also wanted pretty much all of the stakeholders involved, all the other state and federal agencies that are interested in wetlands, some of the nonprofits. We wanted everybody to work on this thing together so that when we were done, there would be a consensus, which I think we have.
It's also a consensus, if not an empirical, incontrovertible fact, Letitia, that we've lost about 85-90% of wetlands.
That's right. At the time that the first iteration of this report was done in 1999, we had lost that much. And now, as we just talked about, we've started to turn that around.
Well, this is the crisis moment. Now we're at it. We've got to do something now.
Yeah, the reason,
sink or swim, so to speak.
That's exactly right. And there's a really compelling reason why, and that's because of sea level rise. We've seen the sea level rise about 8 inches so far over the last 100 years. But that curve is going to ramp up and the sea level will start rising much faster in just a few decades. And we need our marshes in place protecting our shoreline before that happens.
We need the wetlands to protect the shores, basically.
That's exactly right, yeah. Before this ocean really gets going.
And Sam, better restoring than, for example, levees, dikes?
Well, we can build smaller, cheaper levees if we have wetlands between them and the bay. And the Bay Institute has sort of demonstrated that fairly empirically. And I think it also is a question of values of what we want the bay to look like. People really value the fact that they can walk out on the bay and experience the wildlife, you know, and the vistas. And if we want to hang on to that, then wetland restoration is the way to go. Otherwise, we're just going to build a lot of big honking seawalls, and you won't really be able to see the bay when you're on the inland side of them.
Well, this is something that I know is of great concern to our listeners in the Bay Area, and I want to give you an opportunity, well, not only the Bay Area, but, you know, we're being listened to throughout the country and beyond, and people who appreciate this area and particularly appreciate the wetlands and all that they have to offer and the recreation of the Bay and, you know, the beauty of the Bay and so forth. I want to actually get involved in this conversation. This is a report where the Bay Area infrastructure and communities are really at risk without wetlands restoration as climate change continues to move forward. And I'd like to hear from you, our listeners, on this. And I know many of you may want to have questions about the report and what's in it. So feel free to join us. Let me give you the toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. And it's really not stating things in any hyperbolic way to say that the Bay Area, as one report put it, is on the brink here. There are low-lying areas, and there's a possibility really of flooding. We may indeed have to concern ourselves with avoiding what was seen in New Orleans. And that's all a part of the picture here. I do welcome your phone calls. Again, you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Letitia Grenier, what else is in this report that people need to be advised of, or particularly maybe even alarmed of?
Well, I think there's an important idea that we didn't realize before, which is that what wetlands need to keep up with sea level rise is sediment or silt to help them build up. And we've actually seen a huge decrease of that in the bay. And what the scientists realized is that we can increase our sediment supply again by doing some win-win restorations in our watersheds of streams and how we manage our lands.
Bay Area has risen, Sam Shook it, about 8 inches since 1900. And now we have a prediction of what, like a foot more of a rise? Imminent?
The official state prediction is another 16 inches by about 2050 and about 55 inches by the end of the century. And, you know, 16 inches is quite a lot, and the middle of the century isn't really that far off.
We're talking really about the specter of, as I said earlier, rising seas, surging tides, and severe storms.
Right. It's important. It's not just about the bathtub level of the bay, as we call it. The real threat and the real driver of flooding will be big storms in the winter during high tides, which as chance would have it, it looks like we're going to get to experience a few of those this winter.
Well, again, I'm interested in what listeners have to say or ask about this. We're talking about a new report that reveals that 42,000 acres, and that is the correct figure, of wetlands in the Bay Area must be restored over the next 15 years to mitigate the effects of climate change. We're talking about rising sea levels, swelling tides, excuse me, and strong storms which threaten billions of dollars worth of businesses. And this is a restoration program that's been proposed that has a price tag of about $1.5 billion. There are, though, and we should get this on the record too, Sam, about $400 million in federal and state funds already, and there's going to be maybe a ballot measure?
Yeah, the San Francisco Bay Restoration Authority is considering a ballot measure in 2016. This would be a parcel tax in the nine-county Bay Area that would generate about $25 million a year or $500 million over the 20-year life of the parcel tax, and that would in addition to taking us much further towards the goal of the funds that we need, it would also be funding that we could count on every year. We wouldn't have to worry about the ups and downs of federal and state funding.
And we will go to your calls here forthwith. Toll-free number again, 866-733-6786. Here's an email, and you can email us, forum@kqed.org. And I know there are probably people who want to know about specific areas that we're talking about here, and this is one that may begin that conversation. Can you tell us what's being built on the mudflats of the bay just north of Whipple Road on Highway 101?
just north of – so that sounds like the part of the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project, which is actually –
I believe that's what it's asking for.
The largest it's the largest wetland restoration project west of the Mississippi that we – the state and the federal government acquired 15,000 acres from Cargill 10 or 12 years ago, and the restoration has been proceeding. The next big phase is going to be the construction of 4 miles of levee.
This is all around Redwood City in that area.
That's right, and the base of the Dumbarton Bridge.
So what's the status of it?
Well, we've restored
– we did a whole program on it, by the way. I think it's in our archives if anybody's interested.
I think I remember that, actually.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We've restored about 3,500 acres since the acquisition. And we're at the point now where we have to provide some flood protection for communities before we open up some of these lands to the bay again. You know, the next big piece, as I mentioned, is Alviso, which is actually subsided. So this is a North San Jose community that's 10 to 15 feet below sea level. And we'd like to restore the wetlands there, but we're going to have to build a levee to protect them before we do that.
Okay, let's find out what our listeners want to ask and say. Paul, you're up first here. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. And thank you to both of your guests for your leadership over many years in developing the science to make the entire Bay Area knowledgeable and thoughtful about how to approach this crisis and be ready to respond. I want to have a quick question for Mr. Schuchat. You know, I understand that you've been involved with the San Francisco Bay Restoration Authority's efforts to develop a parcel tax for proposal to the voters of the nine counties that would actually generate some significant funding to get ahead of the curve. So you've been working on the policy the fiscal problem as well as the scientific problem that underlies it. I wanted to give you a chance to speak to that.
So one of the things that we've learned really clearly, Paul, is that the folks who live here really love and appreciate the Bay, and they appreciate the things that the Bay does for their quality of life, the wildlife that you can see, the fish in the water, the opportunity to walk around it. What's been missing for those of us involved in the work of restoring San Francisco Bay has been a source of local money. We've done fairly well, you know, as you mentioned, Michael, with federal funding and actually even better with state funding. But it's hard to know year to year, you know, what comes in. So the Restoration Authority is looking at a $12 per parcel tax on the on basically every parcel in the nine county Bay Area. And this would generate about $500 million over a 20-year period. And it would be a huge, hugely welcome infusion into this effort. And, you know, the report that we and Letitia and 200 other scientists worked on states pretty clearly that if we want to complete this restoration work, we've got about 20 years to do it. And after that, the seas are going to be rising too fast for newly established wetlands to keep pace.
So I was saying now's the time.
So now is the time. And this Restoration Authority parcel tax is a big part of what the means would be.
Let me thank Paul for his call. The report also says that if we did some ringing of large sections of the bay with seawalls and levees, it would maybe destroy many of the marshes, and it would cost too much.
It would destroy the marshes. It would cost more money. Also, some years ago, the Coastal Conservancy did a study with a scientist at UC Berkeley that showed that if you armor the South Bay, if you just build seawalls in the South Bay, it actually increases the flooding risk in the North Bay. So that's another reason to try to work as much with nature as we can as opposed to work against
it. This is like a five-dimensional chess game.
It is
really
a five-dimensional chess game.
Let me bring some more callers on here. We'll go to Inverness and welcome Kate. Kate, join us.
Thank you so much. I want to report that Tamales Bay has had the wetlands restored at the Point Reyes end, and the quality of the water is unbelievably changed and improved over the last 2 years.
So that's the restoration of the Giacomini Ranch at the south end of the bay, where the Fish and Wildlife Service was able to let Tamales Bay back in. And, you know, what's interesting is as we've done the restoration that we have done in San Francisco Bay, we've seen all kinds of wildlife move back in. We've seen leopard sharks that we used to have, and then we didn't have them for a while, and now they're back. We have eelgrass. You know, we have oysters growing in the bay again. So
there's been a big comeback of harbor porpoise and right. river otters. And I think the caller points out something really important about the wetlands, which is water quality. Wetlands clean the water, and they actually save us a lot of money by assimilating some of the waste that are coming out of our sewage treatment plants.
And let me thank the caller. Kate, good to hear from you. Let's hear from Michael, our next caller from Dublin. Morning.
Yes, I had a question for your guests about the long-term threat to the Central Valley in San Joaquin County from rising sea levels.
There is a threat there. Letitia's, in fact, nodding her head. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, one thing that often came up during this report is that a similar effort is really needed for the Delta and the Central Valley. And I think they're working on it, but it just hasn't quite happened yet. But they are subject to many of the same risks that we have here.
Sacramento is only 19 feet above sea level. Yeah. Which isn't very much.
And maybe people on the phone or people who are listening don't realize it's all one estuary. Sacramento is just the other end of the exact same bay that we're living on here.
That's right.
And Michael, thank you for your call. Let me bring another caller on. Cody, welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'd like to hear how this project would impact the local wildlife. It seems like it's often focused on how humans will benefit and there's a human-specific approach to it. But I'd like to hear how it would impact the other species that we share the planet with.
This would be hugely beneficial from wildlife. That's actually what my background is in. And one of the things to think about is it would benefit wildlife overall. These marshes are incredible food webs, so they would feed lots and lots of animals. But we've also got an incredible number of endangered species found only here in our Bay Area wetlands. And those species could come back with this restoration.
And the restoration that we've done so far in various places around the bay has shown that essentially if you build it, then they show up.
Thank you for the call. Cody, we're talking, if you've just joined us, with Sam Shookett, who's executive officer of the California State Coastal Conservancy. That's an independent state agency that works through non-regulatory means to protect, restore, and enhance coastal resources, including the wetlands, which is really our focus. And the agency helped coordinate a wetlands report. Letitia Grenier is the lead scientist on that wetlands report. She's co-director and senior scientist of the Resilient Landscapes Program for the San Francisco Estuary Institute. And let me bring more of your calls on. We go next to Mike in Fremont. Mike, welcome.
Well, hi, good morning. Hey, I never heard of anyone talk about actually digging giant canals into large depressions that are on Earth. There's six or seven very large depressions that are below sea level. And if canals were dug from the oceans to those depressions, I would think that would really help mitigate sea level rise all over the world.
Canals. Sam, Letitia?
I suspect that Dr. Grenier is more mathematically adept than I am, since she has a PhD and I don't. But I think that if you looked at the volume of the ocean and the volumes of water that are coming into the ocean as the ice melts, that filling in places like, for instance, Death Valley probably wouldn't make a huge difference.
And the ice is melting.
Yeah,
Letitia.
Yeah.
Dr. Grenier?
It's an interesting thought. I don't have a lot to add, but I have a feeling the people who want to protect the wildlife in Death Valley and other places would have something to say about that.
That's true.
And let me thank you for the question, Mike. We'll get as many of you on here as we can. Let's go to Redwood City. Guadalupe, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
My question is basically, how, if the policy parcel tax would pass, affecting communities that are coming from low income and can't raise that funding for restoration, how would that play out in terms of trying to restore the communities of low-income people?
Sam?
Does that make sense?
Yeah, one of the interesting things about the Bay Area compared to other parts of the state is that we actually have quite a few low-income communities right on the Bay, Alviso, East Palo Alto, Richmond. That's not the case in other parts of the state of California, or not as much the case. And those are communities that are really will be at the front line of flood risk from sea level rise. So we think that this restoration program, if you will, with the flood protection that comes with it, is going to be of huge benefit. I mentioned Alviso. I mean, so that's a low-income, largely Latino neighborhood that is already well below sea level rise because of the groundwater pumping that happened in Silicon Valley for a long time. So they are high on our list of places that need protection, and we'd like to give it to them.
Guadalupe, many thanks for joining us, and on we go to more of your calls. Let's go to Diane in Sunnyvale. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Good morning. So I had a question about the responsibility of businesses and corporations in the Bay Area, because so much of the population is here because of the economy to support these businesses. What will their responsibility be in restoring the Bay?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about getting, you know, some of the giants, Google, Facebook, and so forth, involved. To what extent are they, Sam Shugart?
They've been somewhat involved through the Silicon Valley Leadership Group and through the Bay Area Council. I mean, it's interesting. A lot of these businesses are at sea level on the Bay.
Yeah.
So you'd think that
they would have a personal interest here.
But it's very it's not any easier to get, and in some ways it's harder to get businesses to focus on a long-term threat, you know, than it is just regular people. I mean, they tend to be thinking in terms of this quarter, this year, and we're asking them to worry about something that's going to happen in 20 or 30 years. And I think that's part of the challenge.
Well, it's also a challenge, I think, with the citizenry in general, because people are very reactive to disasters as opposed to thinking in the long term, which is what we're talking about, although it's not really that long a term. I mean, we're talking about, I think, fewer years for Iran to build a bomb in terms of a negotiation that just occurred. Letitia?
Yeah, I'd like to add one ray of hope to that, which is that Google has established an ecology program, and we've actually started working with them at the San Francisco Estuary Institute to look at some long-range restoration options for the streams and the watersheds that would then benefit these wetlands that we're talking about. So I think there's some shift that's beginning in the thinking in the business end.
Let me thank Diane for her call, and right we go to another caller from Sacramento. Scott, you're on. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, thank you. Thanks for asking.
I'd like the proponents of the parcel tax to explain why they're proposing a parcel tax versus a general tax, as I suspect the majority of the Bay Area counties are not property owners. They are residences, yet everyone gets benefit from these restorations.
So we looked at that. It's very difficult in the post-Prop 13, post-Prop 218 to do that. We actually looked at a number of different options, and in terms of what is feasible legally as well as what through polling people will support, we settled on the parcel tax as the best pathway.
Let me thank the caller. Let me go to some tweets and emails, listener tweets with Seawater Rise. How are development projects like Treasure Island possible, and do they take Seawater Rise into account? We've received several questions about Treasure Island.
I'm not an expert on Treasure Island, but my understanding is that in the permitting process, they were essentially required to take sea level rise into account and construct levees that will be expandable and also pull back a little bit from the shoreline.
Letitia Grenier, here's a listener, Amy, who says, I'm wondering if there are organizations that are organizing volunteers to support the restoration efforts, and who are they? I'd love to be involved, and I know many others in the Bay who want to stop this before it's too late.
Well, that's a great question. One of the easiest ways to get involved is through Save the Bay. They have a lot of volunteer programs where you can actually get out in the wetlands and plant plants and be a part of this.
And Save the Bay really is the organization that brought the idea of local funding to wetland restoration to everyone's attention. They've been very much behind this from the beginning. So if you want to get involved, that's a really good place to start.
Stuart writes, is there an online map that identifies the affected areas or areas under threat, and where can we get access to the report?
The way to get to the report is at baylandsgoals.org, so baylandsgoals.org. And in that report, you will find several maps that will help you understand how this has changed over time and what's going to happen in the future.
And you can go to our website where we have those posted, kqed.org. Carl tweets, does wetland restoration include the unengineered levees of the Delta, and how will that survive rising sea level, rising water level, excuse me?
Again, this report did not actually cover the Delta, but it is part of the same estuary subject to the same risks. And there's a huge risk with those unengineered levees in the Delta. So there needs to be a similar plan for what to do. And wetland restoration could be a huge part of the solution there. And the governor's been working on that with the agencies in the Delta.
Ben writes online, are there any areas that are not necessary to preserve to build housing on? The Bay Area has a huge housing crisis, and I understand that we need to preserve certain areas, but are there places that can be developed?
I personally wouldn't want my house in the path of sea level rise. So I think the lands we're talking about are so low that they're not ideal for this.
And Sam, you want to say something here?
There are very heavily developed places in the Bay Area that we'll probably have to protect, so you could do more development there.
Let me get another caller on. Tom, that's you. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I think the South Bay is so beautiful and ecologically sensitive that we shouldn't have this artificial mountain range of city dumps ringing the bay that really spoil the view. Yeah, I remember the Shell Mountain was removed from Emeryville, supposedly a nuisance eyesore spell and all that sort of thing. But I think we should do the same thing with all the above-ground dumps, liquefy it and pump it into the under our cities that are, you know, in danger, you know, jack them up above sea level after it's sterile, you know, the junk is sterilized and everything. But I think it would greatly improve, you know, life and also open space for parks because, you know, no one's going to want to, you know, have a picnic on top of a dump. Shell Mound maybe, but not a dump. Thank you.
Okay, Tom, thank you for that statement. And we'll have to let it conclude because we have come to the end of the hour. Thank you both for being here and thank you for the work you've done, Sam. Shookit, again, is executive officer of the California State Coastal Conservancy. And Letitia Ganier is co-director and senior scientist of the Resilient Landscapes Program. And again, you can read the report online by going to kqed.org. And you can also continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org. And we're going to go to another hour up ahead. We're going to meet Alison Bechdel, who wrote Fun Home, which was made into a very successful Broadway musical, won 5 Tony Awards. She's also a graphic novelist and cartoonist who did the comic strip Dykes to Watch Out For. That's up ahead in the hour, second hour of the Forum program. Here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And thank you for being a part of this morning's program, our first hour. Stay tuned for the next one. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.